Welcome to the inaugural episode of Breaking Down Barriers, a podcast for entrepreneurship community practitioners. This podcast is a production of Startup Space, an entrepreneurship community building platform. I am your host, David Panraj. We are launching this podcast to highlight the stories of everyday community leaders who break down barriers to entry for underserved and underrepresented entrepreneurs. We believe in equitable and inclusive access to the tools and resources needed to start a business. In this podcast, we will speak with some of the leading voices in the field of inclusive entrepreneurship and learn from their best practices to apply in our own communities as practitioners. Today, we'll be speaking with Jackie Dietrich, a personal friend of mine and an advisor to Startup Space. Welcome, Jackie.
Hi, David.
Thank you for joining us today. We've talked on and off about your work with ecosystem building, and so I'm thrilled to be talking to you today.
Thank you so much for having me. You know, I'm a passionate believer in the tools and in the systems that help ecosystem builders to be better at their jobs and more capable and to earn recognition for what they do. And I think you at Startup Space helped to do that. So I'm very pleased to be here. I, for the last 10 or 12 years, was a resident of the Boulder, Denver area, where I was an ecosystem builder and really got my start as a small business owner here in the Black Hills of South Dakota, where I now live. Recently moved back, but I started as a vegetarian who believed in a couple of entrepreneurs who wanted to change the way that America eats meat. So we got together and started a buffalo meat company here in the Black Hills in South Dakota. So now it's a part of the Tin Shed Venture Fund that through Patagonia. And the founder is recognized as one of the soil cowboys who are helping to combat climate change. So that's been an interesting journey of watching that company evolve. But in the midst, after 5 years of running that company, I recognized that I needed to go in a different direction and found myself in Denver in the MBA program at the University of Colorado Boulder, where instead of pursuing working as a product manager in the natural organic food space, I decided to run entrepreneurship programs at the university and help college students find their way into entrepreneurship. And then found myself at the Commons on Champa, which is a public entrepreneurship center in downtown Denver, which is how I met Startup Space and got involved there, and then left to do Established, which is where I am now as director of partnerships working in our consulting business.
Wow. And
I'm very excited to be an advisor to Startup Space.
Yes, absolutely. We thank you for that. Just listening to your story, and I've heard this story before. The one thing that has always stood out for me is that when it comes to breaking down barriers, I think the biggest barrier that any small business has is that they need to get a chance. And the more disadvantaged or the more underrepresented you are, the fewer chances you have to be able to break through. For us, that first chance came from you. So the question to you is, what does that thought process look like that makes you want to give small businesses a chance?
The orientation for me around taking bets on small businesses and startups really started as a teenager and going through the process. You know, I grew up in rural South Dakota, a single mom who was raising three kids, working as a secretary. When I was, I believe, 15, she got just this wild hair idea that she really wanted to start a bookstore in her local community, would have been the only one, where she could gather community and have conversations around civics and the way that our city was being run and how the everyday residents in that city were experiencing quality of life. In that process, she went in to meet with a small business advisor that I believe the bank kind of mandated that she go into. And she prepared and wrote her business plan and went through all of the hoops and sat down with this person who happened to be a white man who had probably, you know, born and raised in South Dakota, had a very conventional idea around the business community, and simply looked at her and said, "People like you don't start businesses." And from that moment, I was just so irate. And, you know, unfortunately, I think she listened to that advice, that it really struck her confidence because she didn't have people around her that said, nah, let me tell you how I did it. Ever since that moment, it has been critically important to me that we not look past the people in our communities who have big ideas for how, what could really stand to improve quality of life. And I think that, you know, you ask that question around what does inclusion really mean and why are tools that really democratize access to those resources, why are those so important? And so for me, it first was cultural awareness of just having access, seeing people in your community who are business owners, having some base level knowledge of knowing how all of that works and having role models who've done it before where you know, if a banker tells you, nah, that's never going to work, but you have people you can turn to and say, well, how did you do it? So that was, you know, part of the work that I began doing was around, well, how do I, as a person, start to look at barriers around capital and the corporate world or having those kinds of business opportunities, the mentors, the education? What does it look like to improve access to people in my community? And that wealth creation should not be about who you know or where you grew up, but really be about your own goals and ambitions, and that it's really about how do I set someone free from those structural barriers and those cultural perceptions to build something new in the face of uncertainty. And so when I see an entrepreneur who really has an idea for how do I improve my community or how do I solve a real problem, which is what, when you walked through the door of the Commons, I looked at what you were building and I thought, well, that solves an immediate problem that I've been having. I think that that's an important investment, like that there are ways of investing, but it's also where I put my influence and help to share the stage with entrepreneurs who are building something creative and are taking that risk to do something unique and different and think about solutions in new ways.
Absolutely. And, you know, you mentioned something that is for us also part of our belief system, which is entrepreneurship is about wealth creation for your families and creating long-term wealth that can break cycles of being suppressed or cycles of poverty, right? And so, you know, thinking about going down that same tangent on wealth creation for these underserved entrepreneurs who just need that chance, what are some on-ramps? What are some things that we can do as a community? So when entrepreneurs come with a valid idea and are lacking the access so that we can continue to break those barriers?
I would say one of the most powerful movements that I've seen in the communities where I worked were for community organizers or ecosystem builders in roles like mine, where it's very much, you know, that direct support of entrepreneurs, you know, whether you're supporting through programs and sometimes investing in those entrepreneurs, is using your social capital in your community to encourage the service providers to produce products that better align with what those entrepreneurs need. The on-ramps come from the work that can be done to translate what is needed into a product in the marketplace that helps those entrepreneurs to meet their needs. So a great example is creating, you know, bank loans that help to bridge that gap in that first 2 years that's pre-revenue. And how do we encourage bankers to offer those really simple programs in cooperation with entrepreneurship centers for the education that we provide to help show that we are de-risking those opportunities? And so when we think about like the very real on-ramp of just access to small amounts of capital to get started, or to do feasibility tests, advocating for what those products should look like, and then ensuring that they're in really simple terms that anyone can understand whether they have business experience or not. I think also just having those safe spaces where, for example, the Commons was able to bring in the city, the Office of Economic Development, small business advisors who understand all of the logistics and the technical aspects of starting a business in our community, that they were able to interface in a very casual environment over a cup of coffee in a space that's open to anyone. It feels like a public library where you can walk in and have, you know, maybe it's a level of anonymity or have someone who says hello and asks you how they can help you navigate the resources, where the stakes are very low. And so really working to ask folks to show up who can bring their community with them, making the direct asks for what behaviors you want to see those communities perform in your environment. And in the Commons case, the on-ramp was often finding those community members who are very effective communicators and ambassadors in their own communities to then come into places like the Commons and to take a lead in a program where they had some real, a certain role that they were able to play and really own, and then ultimately really asking them to be in charge. And I think that's ultimately what effective on-ramps look like, are when we can have those underserved or underrepresented communities see that ambassadors from their communities are in charge, whether it's, you know, as technical service providers in a CDFI or a program manager in their entrepreneurship center, wherever that is, like those have to be very authentic roles in a community.
So talking about, you know, what's on top of everybody's mind today, Jackie, which is, you know, COVID-19 and impacted underserved communities far worse than other communities. The crisis is much larger in underserved communities. What are some steps that our community practitioners can take to support entrepreneurs when this crisis like this? Putting your entrepreneur's hat on and then putting your practitioner's hat on, is there some advice you have or even seen people do well in kind of helping entrepreneurship communities deal with COVID-19 and its aftermath?
What I would say has been the most powerful transition that I've seen because of COVID-19 is really those organizations that are starting to ask the question and that are making very significant muscle movements towards thinking about how members of those communities that are most affected are able to control the purse strings and to really manage the programs that are most supportive of those small businesses. So I think the role that we can play to be supportive and to be advocates for how the philanthropic dollars get deployed through decision makers in those communities that are most affected is critically important. Recognizing and advocating and ensuring that message is carried forward, that those communities have deep capability and deep talent in being able to understand how to recover and how to deal with this best in the economic terms in their own communities, I think is critically important. And then I think also for, you know, those of us who aren't necessarily representative of those communities that have been most affected, using our platforms to communicate what that impact looks like and what those communities are asking for support. And so for me, it's very much about how those in power not just do lip service, but are transferring true power into the program managers and the community organizations that really understand how to take care of those communities best.
Yes, I've seen that in some of our partnerships. For example, in Detroit, I've seen that funding local organizations that then provide both the funding to the grantees plus the technical assistance.
I think at the entrepreneur level, it can come down to the fact that, you know, a lot of these entrepreneurs have ideas for what a pivot could look like or what they could be doing, but they often, you know, it's something new. It's not the areas where they've researched or built out their networks. And, you know, just yesterday I was having text message exchanges with an entrepreneur who was looking for a way to pivot her business and just needed some connection. And, you know, those are very simple actions that we could take, but it's also more important than ever to have a deep understanding of your ecosystem map, what resources are out there and available, and who to call on that will really be effective and supportive in a time like this.
Absolutely. If there is one message that you would like to directly speak to the practitioners of entrepreneurship community building that are listening to this podcast, what would that be?
If there were one message that I could share about breaking down barriers as an ecosystem builder, it is very much about scratching the surface. It's so easy to look across communities and think, oh, you know, there are these two or three things that we have to do to really be effective ecosystem builders. And I would just encourage people to look past that. There's so much more out there. The tool sets, what's available in terms of creative partners that are willing to really dig in and do this work with us in our communities. There's more out there than you might see, whether it's the websites that you look at or what resources seem readily available. And I think ecosystem building is incredibly rewarding, but also one that makes us very susceptible to that feeling that the work is never done. If there's anything that I've learned in the last 5 years, is that there's an incredible network of incredibly creative professionals, of organizations, of companies like Startup Space that are really willing to think and partner with you. Those partners really do want you to succeed. So I would just encourage folks to, you know, don't just accept what's easy to find and what's out there, but to really think about ways to get connected and to find those partners who are willing to help expand the art of what's possible in your own community.
Absolutely. The other thing, Jackie, that I have been thinking about is that when there is that growth mindset, then there's immediately the recognition that two and two can make five, right? That the best minds, when they come together, a lot of these concepts around, you know, the same pool of money or the concepts around there's only that much amount of resources available kind of, in my mind, go away, because together you can have a multiplier effect. And I think where ecosystem builders have come together, I have seen that those communities have flourished. I don't know if, you know, if you've seen best practices around that, but I think it goes in the same vein of what you just shared.
When I stepped into the role at the Commons on Champa in Denver, there was very much some of that, the scarcity mentality. Yep. That we were competing for similar dollars, or if you were trying to support women entrepreneurs, that there was only enough space in the community for one organization that supported women entrepreneurs. And I was fortunate to have some advisors who were very, very accomplished community organizers in various capacities that were involved in the Commons at the time, that came from a lot of the underrepresented communities that we most wanted to support. But it was their encouragement to just bring people to the table and ask them to give input and to have a conversation and to communicate with them in a way that was intentional. You know, we went to them and said, we would like to meet with you once a quarter and have these conversations about what's happening in the community. And we want you to share what programs you're working on and how the community could step up to support what you're doing. And to really come into those conversations, defining what your organization does when it's at its best. I would say cooperating with those other organizations, and we had over 80 different organizations on our list at the Commons that were invited to those conversations, and the power of coming from that place of appreciating who they were as organizers and as entrepreneurship service organizations in our community, and then giving them the space to just say, and this is what we need. This is our challenge that we're dealing with now. So if anyone knows X, Y, or Z, please let me know. Here's my business card. The trust building that opened and created was just remarkable. And I think did a lot to help transform that idea that we aren't competing. We're actually trying to think of ways that we can cooperate and work together to get the very best resources for the entrepreneurs in our community.
Wow. Thank you for sharing that. So I have one last question for you. Tell us a little bit more about Established and how our audience can learn more about Established and also follow your work.
Thank you. My role at Established is as Director of Partnerships. Established is a consultancy that started just 2 years ago, but is the culmination of a decade or more of our co-founders working with startups and in the creation of Tech Cocktail. So it was one of the first true networking and pitch style events for tech startups about 12 years ago, I think it was now. So now Established organizes and supports innovation initiatives for our clients to engage the startup community. And right now, one of my biggest clients is the Air Force, where we're helping them to think about how to be a worthy partner to the business community, to the private sector, but especially to startups. We also run a program called Startup of the Year, which is where our community comes together once a year. Startups apply year round. We select the top 100 to meet with our investor community, our corporate leaders and clients to pitch and give feedback and to form relationships. And then the top five compete for an investment from our fund, Established Ventures. So as our partnership program really focuses on the investment community that really wants exposure to startups, we focus specifically on underrepresented communities, but also in underrepresented geographies. So looking outside of Silicon Valley for the best and brightest startups, and then also the entrepreneurship support organizations that are looking for resources for the startups they're supporting and investing in. So that is the work of Established. And really, to learn more, we're at established.us. If you're investing in or supporting entrepreneurs and think a partnership is possible, I'm at Jackie, J-A-C-Q-U-I, at est.us. And startups in your community can apply for that annual summit to be a part of that through September 15th at startupofyear.com.
Jackie, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you today. It's been just listening to you has given me some goosebumps around the work that you've experienced and you've shared with us today. I'm sure that our audience is going to learn and appreciate what ecosystem building looks like from your perspective. So thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, David and team, for inviting me and for your work to support our ecosystem builder community.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Breaking Down Barriers, a podcast for entrepreneurship community practitioners, hosted by David Ponraj. Special thanks to Jackie Dietrich and show manager and creative director Mackenzie Dial Fritcher. Edited and produced by Lauren Bernard, cover art by Mackenzie Dial Fritcher. If you'd like to suggest interviewees, new topics, or just want to reach out, please email us at podcast@startupspace.app. All Breaking Down Barriers episodes are available wherever you get your podcasts. Please feel free to rate, review, and subscribe for all the latest updates.